When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're going to be talking about Ed Sheeran's new album Divide and the Netflix series Love.
Anna has also watched the Terrence Malick film Days of Heaven for the first time, so she'll be telling us how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
So, in the Seriously world, there's been a big album release this week. And that's where we're beginning. Divide is the third album by British singer-songwriter Ed Sheeran, featuring the two lead singles Castle on the Hill and Shape of You. You've probably heard them if you've turned on the radio, like ever, in the past couple of months.
Or just even walked past a main road where people have radios on in their cars. That's how I first experienced this.
So it's had a huge commercial reception, breaking the record for the most top 10 songs from a single album on the UK singles chart. It's had 9 songs in the top 10 in a single week, but it's had mixed critical reactions. Friend of the podcast, Laura Snapes, wrote an excellent piece for Pitchfork all about this album, a long review. You just got to read it, really.
Yeah, it's absolutely outstanding. It's everything you need to know about the album and what it says about Ed Sheeran's mind, really.
Yeah, and it's a real evisceration of his nice guy brand as well. It's not just about the lyrics and the music, but it's also about this persona he's sort of built for himself, which when you're reviewing like a massive artist like Ed Sheeran is a big part of the package. So it is really relevant and it's a really, really great review. So we listened to Divide this week. It is an extremely Ed Sheeran album. If you've had any contact with any of Ed Sheeran's songs, then just imagine that kind of doubled, and that's what you get from this album, I'd say.
Yeah, so the slightly, what I like to think of as like fake folk of Ed Sheeran is in full throttle in this album.
Yeah.
Like there's lots of slightly underproduced sounding jangly guitar, yet also beats.
And he also then has his like solely slow things that he enjoys in that thinking out loud vein.
Oh, and he raps.
Yeah, the rapping's not good.
The rapping is the worst. The whole album opens with him doing a rap. So you turn it on, you're like, whoa, Ed Sheeran's doing rapping. Actually, the rap intro to Eraser is not the worst rap that he does on the whole album. There's one later on where it doesn't even scan. Like if you were to write it out, you know, just poem wise there's like one too many syllables and he's like slightly swallowing the syllable at the end of the line. So even though his delivery is also quite poor, like the actual scansion of the rap is also very poor.
Do you remember when we were talking about Scum, which I'm so obsessed with, I will bring up every week now. We were talking about the boys in Scum. They go to a cabin and they're like dressed in plaid and they're like rapping Eminem over a guitar, an acoustic guitar that someone's sort of playing with. And that's Ed Sheeran.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
That's what happens when that boy becomes a multi-million dollar artist. You get Ed Sheeran. So it's kind of cringe for me, a lot of this album. But I would be lying if I said I didn't enjoy listening to it purely for the hilarity of some of the lyrics.
Yeah, so we wanted to really review this album through its lyrical, what would you even call it? Like through its like lyrical fantasia. Because really everything you need to know about Ed Sheeran is summed up in a couple of his lyrics. So like for instance, the one from Eraser where he says, I think that money is the root of all evil and fame is hell, famous rich person Ed Sheeran. So this is exactly the dichotomy that Laura brings out in her review, that Ed Sheeran is a very, very, very successful pop star who has built his success on the fact that he's like, oh, slightly scruffy, oh, slightly, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. Oh, I never went to university.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he has parlayed that into an incredible empire.
Yeah, and it's more than that as well. It's he's very openly keen on commercial success. you know, when asked, would you be upset if this album didn't sell more than the 15 million copies that Multiply sold, he was like, oh, it just will. I'm not worried about that. And like, he has said, you know, I didn't want to release this album at the same time as Bruno Mars or Adele or someone else, but it's great because the schedule has, you know, he's really thinking about all these very, very commercial minded things, but he still likes to sing about how people who think about money are awful and evil. And he's this like, you know, weird anti-capitalist angel. So it is really funny.
And I do want to say that I'm not down on Ed Sheeran because he's made a lot of money and is very successful and wants to try and explore the struggles that can produce, because that is legitimate. Like, it's the fact that he has done it in such a compartmentalized way.
There's not a lot of nuance in, I think, money is the root.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There's definitely been some really great art where really successful people have explored the loneliness that success can bring and the dark difficulties of fame in comparison to the like bright lights of the other side of it. You know, that has produced some amazing things. This is not one of them, though, because this is just Ed Sheeran saying, oh, money is bad, P.S. give me all your money.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. There are so many lyrics from this album that are my favourites that I just don't even know where to begin. I wrote a piece for the New Statesman website in the spirit of Laura's review, just picking out some of the lyrics that I thought were the funniest. I find it hilarious that there is not one but two and possibly even three references to Van Morrison playing out of a jukebox on this album, which is hilarious in Galway Girl and Dive. Galway Girl, we do have to mention, because it is, I think, possibly the worst song on the planet.
Oh, it's so deeply, deeply upsetting. The Galway Girl of the title as well. The way she's described is just, it's so stereotyped and so awful. You know, she's like this freewheeling Irish girl. And it goes, I never heard Carrick Fergus ever sung so sweet a cappella in the bar using her feet for a beat. Ugh. It's like, oh, she sings in a pub. Ugh. And the only accompaniment is her stamping because she's Irish and that's what Irish people do.
Yeah, and she like drinks him under the table and can hold her liquor and you're like,
oh, and she can play pool. And,
yeah.
So,
I saw a real funny series of tweets by someone called Amy O'Connor where she was like, what bar on Grafton Street? There is no bar on Grafton Street. Why is this Irish person using the word Gaelic? Everything is wrong. I really like the song Save Myself, which is all about how Ed Sheeran is like this very, very generous person. In fact, as he describes, I gave you all my energy and I took away your pain because human beings are destined to radiate or drain. He's like, I Ed Sheeran, I'm a radiator.
I'm a giver, not a taker.
Exactly. And it also includes the line, I gave all my oxygen to people that could breathe. So basically, stop asking Ed Sheeran for money. It really pisses him off. That's the message of that song. Any favourites for you, Caroline?
Yes, absolutely. New Man.
Shocking. There's so many levels to New Man, I don't even know where to start.
I hated pretty much all the songs on this album, Galway Girl in particular, for the reasons I've outlined. But I think maybe I've come full circle and I sort of like New Man now. Okay. Because as a kind of piece of satire, or I can kind of imagine listening to it in 15 years' time and being like, yeah, that kind of was 2017.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran releasing a song that said, you were the type of girl who sat beside the water reading, eating a packet of crisps, but you'll never find you cheating. Now you're eating kale, hitting the gym, keeping up with Kylie and Kim in the back of the club, kissing a boy that ain't him. So, because anyone who enjoys the antics of the Kardashians and wants to go to the gym must be an adulterer.
Yeah, it is true that if you watch Keeping Up with Kardashians even for like a split second, you just uncontrollably start cheating on everyone. That's science. Yeah. Something that just like women don't understand.
Yeah,
science.
It's amazing. And I found that there's other lyrics in that song about the man character.
Yeah, there's one in particular that I never need to read again, ever, or hear again.
Yes, about personal hygiene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's just underlines the hypocrisy, because another thing that really annoys me about Ed Sheeran is that he has a very deliberate look.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously he and his team spend time on, like,
and money, whether and it's money on products or just like someone coming in and being like, let's not put any stuff in his hair, let's just like tousle it around a little bit. That still costs money because he still have like a stylist on retainer or whatever.
Yeah, and even though it might look like it sometimes, he doesn't just pick his plaid shirt up off his bedroom floor and to go sniff it and go, it's good for another day, you know.
Yeah.
He has many, many wardrobes of them, whatever. But the New Man character spends loads of time on his appearance,
The lyric goes, I heard he spent £500 on jeans, goes to the gym at least 6 times a week, wears boat shoes with no socks on his feet, and I hear he's on a new diet and watches what he eats. He's got his eyebrows plucked and his arsehole bleached. And that kind of gives you a sense of how much disdain Ed Sheeran has for people who take care of their appearance, because he just looks like that. It's just an accident.
What do you think, though, about the characterization on this album? Because to just flip back to a much, much better album, it's something that people talked about so much with Beyoncé's Lemonade, right? Mm. Is, you know, all of the songs on her album seem so personal, and yet actually I think the more sophisticated and more accurate reading is that she's inhabiting different characters for different songs in order to represent different points of view and reveal different emotions. That is a sort of standard practice of art, particularly songwriting, right?
I mean, I cannot bring myself to use the words Beyoncé and Ed Sheeran in the same sentence, so I won't. But I think maybe a better point of comparison is Justin Bieber's Purpose, which I wrote a piece about when it came out a couple of years ago, because it, for me, that album was either like the whinings of a very pathetic, self-victimizing young man, or an excellent caricature of how terrible young men can be. And it depends how you want to look at it. So yeah, maybe you could make a similar argument about Ed Sheeran's album, where it's like the journey of some fucking idiot.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think he has bothered with that, though.
No,
in this case, he hasn't bothered to construct distinct characters for different songs. The whole thing is sort of in the voice of a slightly whiny man-child who is upset by his own success. Whether that is a character or whether that is just Ed, I think depends on whether you're a fan of his or not, to be honest.
Yeah, so sorry to be mean about Ed Sheeran, everyone.
Not really, sorry.
Not that sorry. And we're not that mean that often on Seriously, so it's a real joy for us to just, you know, whip out some genuinely annoyed opinions every once in a while.
But I do think it is worth treating this album seriously, not least because so many people are spending money on it.
Yeah, it's been absolutely massive, and he is popular for a reason, and he obviously can write a really catchy melody, and people do relate to his lyrics, even if when I hear them I feel like, wow, here's someone trying so hard to be relatable. It's still working. So yeah, congrats Ed Sheeran, you've got loads more money, so enjoy that.
I look forward to the songs about it. Oh, sorry, I have one final question for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was unveiled that he's going to have a cameo on Game of Thrones.
Was it?
Yes, yesterday.
Fuck, I missed that.
What are your thoughts about this? Now that I've just told you that.
Maybe he could be tortured and it'd be satisfying. I don't know. Like, it's just a show, so it wouldn't be any real pain on Ed Sheeran. I mean, he looks like he kind of belongs to that quite grotty, mossy world. I can see it. Wow, looking forward to that. When I was 6 years old, I broke my leg. I was running from my brother and his friends. Tasted the sweet perfume of the mountain grass I rolled down. I was younger then. Take me back to when I found my heart. Kid here, made friends and lost them through the years. And I've not seen the roaring fields in so long. I know I've grown, but I can't wait to go home. I'm on my way, driving at 90 down those country lakes. Singing. Now we're going to talk about Love, which is a Netflix romantic comedy series created by Judd Apatow, Leslie Arfin and Paul Rust. It stars Rust and Gillian Jacobs as Gus and Mickey, two 30-somethings in LA who struggle with dating and relationships. The second series has just launched, but you can listen back to our discussion of the first one on episode 22 back from February last year. Yeah, so another recurring topic on Seriously. I sort of forgot about Love,
I have to say.
It kind of faded into the background of my mind, but we decided we'd do it this week. The last season kind of ended with a big romantic kiss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they immediately start working to undo that in the first episode of the second series.
Yeah, so I was reading a piece on Salon, actually, that gave actually a very positive review to this second series. But it did quite a good job of summarising what Apatow and co said they were trying to achieve with Love originally, which is they wanted to do the reverse of How I Met Your Mother. So they wanted to do a romantic comedy show in which the two protagonists wouldn't end up together. And you were sort of watching their journey towards that rather than their journey towards being together. And so that is what they did with the break between series one and two, where Mickey, who has been struggling with different kinds of addiction and has finally come to the realization that she can't be in this on again, off again, will they, won't they thing with Gus. She just has to say, nope, I'm not doing relationships. I'm focusing on me. She goes to tell him this. She tells him this. And then 2 seconds later, they make out. And then the series ends. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, what's happening here?
And they pick up in exactly the same spot.
Which in my nerdy brain, because Gus is a character who likes to talk about like continuity errors in rom-coms and sitcoms, and he's always, you know, like, oh, if Ross in Friends has seen Die Hard, then how come Bruce Willis appears later? I was like, when is this set now? Because a year has passed, but also no time has passed in the love world, so are we set like a year back or not? And I like couldn't tell. But yes, so they pick up in media res, like from almost exactly where they left off, and then they spend a few days trying to be friends and not make out, right?
Yes, they do. I actually really enjoyed the first episode of the second series. I felt like it was very cleverly written and constructed where, you know, they have this kiss, they have this moment where she's like, no, we're just being friends, I'm not doing this. And obviously the natural thing for the characters to do then, the healthy thing for them to do is to part, not see each other for a while, maybe text a bit. But circumstances keep intervening to keep them together.
Yeah.
You know,
as is required by all rom-coms.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, he needs a lift back to his house. Then when they get to his house, she really needs the loo. So he's like, oh, we'll just pop in really quickly and use the loo. Then while she's in there, a sort of police raid happens. Like some fugitive has run onto the grounds of his apartment complex and, you know, everyone has to stay inside. They try and escape because she's so determined like not to end up staying over with him. That all goes really wrong. Yeah. And inevitably they end up sleeping in the same bed, although nothing happens. But it just gives the writers endless grounds for like awkward moments where he sees her wearing a towel, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I felt like it was very cleverly constructed. I was less convinced, actually. I think I watched 3 episodes in the new series before we did this. And I was less convinced by where it went after that, actually.
Yeah, one thing I do like about this show is that they are very happy to spend lots of time with the protagonists apart. And I like that you get to see a lot of their lives when they're not together. So you get to see Mickey struggling to cope at a dinner party full of slightly older, seeming, maybe they're not actually older, couples. And you see Gus at a bar and finding it all very uncomfortable, the like schmoozing with girls. You get a much bigger sense of why they might act in a certain way when they are together then. And I think that is one of the strengths of like TV rom-coms over movie rom-coms, is that because with all this extra time, you do get to explore character in a lot more depth. And so even if I'm not like really super convinced by Mickey and Gus as a couple, you buy them totally as characters, which is really like important when you're watching something.
Yeah, I also really, really like Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah, me too.
I think she is excellent. I'm less bothered by Paul Rust.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's partly because he's playing quite an unlikable character.
Yeah.
But Mickey is unlikable too in her way, but I don't know, I think Gillian Jacobs is excellent. For anyone who made it through the saga that was Community, she played Britta in Community for all 6 seasons in a movie, and she's really like gone up several levels since then. Like, she's really excellent in this.
Yeah, I agree. And I also agree that I'm like kind of less, I think that's for me why the coupledom doesn't work as well, as I just love seeing Gillian Jacobs like trying to navigate her life. And I don't necessarily buy them that much as a couple, partly because I know we talked about this last time, so I won't try and go back into it again, but partly because we've got another one of these things where it's like supermodel hot woman with like not supermodel hot at all guy, and like that's not a problem in and of itself, but just because we see so much of it, it does get a bit annoying. It's like women aren't allowed to be anything less than super attractive in rom-coms, but men can just look like whatever and we love their personalities and it's fine.
That feeds into something else I've seen in various critics' responses to the second series, which is Judd Apatow has said several times that his vision with Love was to subvert the rom-com. but several people pointed out, were like, Jabata, you own the rom-com now.
Yeah.
Like, yours
is... And it
was
never a subversion, because no. rom-coms, I wrote this piece when series one came on, so I won't go into it too much again, but rom-coms are about unlikable characters who have to routinely embarrass themselves, because that's where the com in the rom comes from. Like, and so that's what this show is. It's two people who are like embarrassing themselves quite a lot and cringing about it, but they like each other ultimately.
There is a certain relaxed stoner quality to it though, which again is the Apatow influence. You know, something like Knocked Up has that too. Which, and I think I said this at some point on the podcast, that I did watch all of series one, despite not being massively in love with it, despite all the times that I say on Seriously that, oh, I absolutely love this show, but I never got to continue with it because we had to move on to the next thing. I made time for series one of Love.
It is easy to watch, definitely.
That's what I was going to say. It's so easy. It just flows on in the background. And it feels, it gives me the same, like, slightly mindless pop culture feeling that I used to get from watching endless repeats of Friends on E4.
Yeah. It's there's something of the Broad City, like, it's so different to Broad City, and I laugh so much more watching Broad City, but there are just like little quirks about it that again give me that feeling of when I was really binging on Broad City and just watching one episode after another, like the kind of dynamic typographic title card with the little snippet of familiar music, like that for me really brings me in again and again. And I want to do something on title cards, because I do think it's weird how, you know, things with like a cartoon theme song like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend can make you watch the next episode because you want to watch the theme tune almost. So I definitely get that sense from it as well. But I also started getting out my leather skirt after seeing Gillian Jacobs in her leather skirt.
It's a hot skirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wears it for, is it the whole of episode one?
Of this season, of this series, yeah. And all of the finale of last season. Yeah. She's like running around in a big grey jumper and a leather skirt, black socks and Adidas sliders. I can't quite pull off the socks and sliders, but I've definitely brought out the leather skirt in the last few days. So thanks, Gillian, for that.
Yeah, it's a very strange one, this. I find it hard to sort of unequivocally recommend it.
Unless
you need that slightly brainless pop culture fix, in which case it's kind of perfect for that.
Yeah, agreed.
So last week, I recommended that Anna give Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven a go. Anna, how was it?
It was an amazingly relaxing watch, I thought. Even though the plot isn't always that relaxing, it's just so beautifully shot. I feel like the whole thing was filmed at that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's ALLBIRDS.com, code SUPER24.
Hour just before sunset, yes. Where everything looks amazing and it's just gorgeous. I did really enjoy it. I was kind of like in two minds about watching it because Terrence Malick has such a reputation as being this like singular filmmaker, like very contemplative and whatever. And I've read Richard Ayoade's Ayoade on Ayoade, I think it's called, which is kind of like a spoof of those director on director Faber series books. And in it, he has all these things like written by Terrence Malick that I like never really got because I'd never seen any Terrence Malick films. They are really funny and I would recommend them, but it made me a bit nervous about like, oh God, is this going to be too artsy for me basically? And is a lot of it going to be lost on me? But I think that it was actually very, very accessible, surprisingly.
So much so. It was the same. Like, my boyfriend really wanted to see this film because he's an academic. It's set in the period that he works on.
Oh, right.
And so he wanted to see it for that reason. But I was kind of moany. I was like, I don't want to go to the BFI on a Friday night to see a Ponzi film. But obviously I did. And I thought it was incredible.
Yeah.
It has a really accessible, simple storyline, very human, you know, about these poor people from sort of industrialized Chicago in the early 20th century. They go south in America looking for work and to get away from a possible crime that Richard Gere's character has committed. And they end up in the panhandle of Texas working in the cornfields. To be honest, most of my love of this film is to do with the way Terrence Malick films corn.
Yes, exactly. It's like funny because it's so much about the visuals and so much about the surface level stuff. And it did get me wondering. I did a little bit of research, not loads, but I found a lot of critics describing Terrence Malick as like a visual poet and phrases and stuff that I don't begrudge. But I wonder why you don't often see someone like Sofia Coppola called a visual poet. You hear them called things like surface over substance. And I do wonder if there's like a bit of gender stuff at play there with how we respond to women directors who are very interested in visuals and aesthetic and male directors who are, because I feel like with male directors there's automatically something more serious about it. And I think of someone like Carol Morley, who I love, who's very, very into how the aesthetic of the landscape plays into the story itself. And yet you do see people really dismissing her as just like a stupid filmmaker. Some thoughts that are not Terrence Malick's fault at all, but just things that I was thinking whilst watching it.
He made this in 1978. I think it was maybe the first or second film that he made out of film school.
After Badlands, I guess.
Yeah, so he was pretty young and, you know, quite new and everything. So I think he just really, really wanted it to look beautiful. Yeah. But there are some really interesting plot themes there as well. Yeah. You know, I won't go too much into it, but there's a strong, like, biblical sin imagery thing going on. There's an absolutely incredible plague of locusts.
Yeah amazing.
And also some interesting stuff about isolation and family. It's a really, really interesting film. And I think I first watched it like a month ago now, and I'm still occasionally like having thoughts about it and unpacking it in my head. So it's a very, very like dense experience.
Yeah, a definite recommend from us.
Also short, can I just say,
yes, 90 minutes.
Appreciate Terrence Malick making what is quite an artsy epic film in an hour and a half.
Yeah, respect. That's the ideal film for me. So for next week, Caroline.
Yes.
We had a couple of emails, including one from just last week, recommending the HBO show The Night Of. And it stars Riz Ahmed and John Turturro. And it's basically a crime show, I would say almost in the vein of Serial, about like, okay, who actually did this crime and who's going to go down for it. Riz Ahmed is great in it. I've been watching it over the last 4 or 5 weeks or something. I think you'll really like it, and I definitely think there'll be interesting things for us to talk about regardless. So do give it a watch.
Sounds great. Always up for a new crime drama.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including iTunes, where you could also leave us a review.
Our listener survey is still open for one last week. If you'd like to tell us what you think of the show and influence what we do in future, head to seriouslypod.com/survey and have your say.
Also on seriouslypod.com, you can find all our back episodes, plus our specials on Home Alone, Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're seriouslypod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media, or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.